Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, it's a historic day in the United States of America. For the first time in U.S. history, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the stock market, eclipsed the 20,000 mark. And I have been receiving texts all morning with respect to that. And I wonder how George Soros feels today, since he bet that the stock market would tank after the Trump inauguration, which it did not. Well, that is something we could talk about in great detail. We're not going to do that. What we do want to talk about is this. President Barack Obama is out of office, but friends, he did anything but go quietly. No, in the waning hours of his presidency, Barack Obama did something that ought to incense every loyal, liberty-loving American, and what he did was this. He sent $227 million in U.S. tax money to an unbelievable place. Well, welcome to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Dave Kistler along with Sam Rohr and Gary Dahl. We're going to have our special guest on today, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, Middle East expert, prophecy expert, and host of his own radio program called Prophecy Today. He's going to be on with us in segments 2, 3, and 4. But for now, I want to go back to this beyond angering story that came out yesterday at the State Department, or a State Department official, actually, and several congressional aides say that the outgoing administration formally notified Congress that it would spend this money on Friday morning. You are hearing me correctly, on Friday morning, just literally minutes before Donald Trump was to become president of the United States. More than $227 million in foreign affairs funding was released at that time, including $4 million for climate change programs and $1.25 million for UN organizations. And friends, there were at least two GOP lawmakers, Ed Royce of California, Kay Granger of Texas, that had placed holds on the Palestinian funds. And while these holds are generally respected by the president and the executive branch, they are not legally binding. And so Obama dismissed those holds and went ahead and released the money. You will remember that the Palestinian Authority is said to be using funds to help what they call humanitarian aid projects. We know that is not the truth. What the Palestinian Authority is reported to be doing with these type compensations is to funnel it to the families of terrorist prisoners and martyrs. And last year, the budget for an organization called Care for Families of the Martyrs, which is a Palestinian organization, was around $175 million, and around $140 million additional funds were reportedly allocated to prisoners and former prisoners. This means that in total, $315 million was spent last year paying terrorists for attacking Israeli civilians. Now, there's a lot more I could say about this, but Sam, I've got a couple of burning questions I want to go right to you to ask. You have served in elected office on the state level, so you have a lot of insight into the allocation of funds. My question to you is this. Why in heaven's name are we sending any money, considering the financial problems we have in the United States right now, to any foreign entity? And especially, why are we sending money to the Palestinian Authority?
Well, Dave, the question is there, the definition of we. You didn't send it to the Palestinian Authority, and neither did I. And neither did these two Congress individuals that you mentioned, nor did really a vote of Congress actually do it. This is the way, one of the funny, not, I would say funny ways, one of the sometimes unbelievable ways that budgets are put together. This kind of thing happens when Congress as a whole concedes its authority, and it has, to a large extent, to the president. They give in the budget vast sums of money that are in pots that are that can be discretionarily used. They're discretionary funds. That's generally what it's called. That falls under the category in the purview of the president. He asked for it. It's part of the deal-making process, generally speaking, so that Congress guys want to get grant money for their districts. They grant authority to the president to take and make discretionary funding. That's where it came out of. These were discretionary pots that Congress had approved for which they can take credit on one hand, and if they don't like it, they can blame it on the president. I would hope that this president, that this administration, this president, stops that kind of practice and makes it so that the budgets, when they're put together, actually has a line item that says where the money is going so people can track it. There's no accountability. Dave, this is an example of that.
Sam, are you saying when you say these are discretionary funds, are you saying that this money, this $227 million, was not specifically allocated to the Palestinian Authority? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that that is probably a 99% chance that that's correct, because it said, as you mentioned, these came out of what were they called, foreign affairs funding? They'll have a line item called foreign affairs or foreign assistance or financial aid, whatever. And into those line items go vast sums of money. And the way they work it is that the State Department can take and negotiate, and they pull money out of those appropriated funds, as an example, or the president can pull things out of there. And it really, on one hand, is helpful because the president, if he's negotiating the right things with other countries, can actually use it to help good countries. But when you have a bad president operating according to bad policies, you end up helping bad people. That's what happened here.
Wow, that's a three-point outline. Bad president, bad policies, and bad people. Sam, I
and alliterated,
impressed.
Too.
I'm telling you what, that'll preach. But you know what?
But it's true, Gary.
Well, it is true. And should it surprise us that Barack Obama is sending this amount of money to the Palestinians? I mean, it's wicked, it's terrible, it's evil, but certainly it should not surprise us. But, Sam, I want to go back to this idea about a congressman can place holds on funds, but it's not legally binding. What really does that mean? I mean, how does that work itself out in the operation of Congress?
Well, you know, there's different kind of holds. You can put somebody in a hold and put handcuffs on them, and then you lock them up. Otherwise, you put a hold on them, and then you just let them go, and they say, ouch. That's what these holds are. These are holds that are not binding. They don't do anything,
so they,
really. No.
They really mean nothing. They really mean
no.
Nothing.
No. When you come right down to it, if you have a president who says, I want to do my own thing, I mean, do you think that a hold, a discretionary hold by a congressman on funding are going to stop a president who says, I'm going to go around Congress and make law through executive orders? This is an example of lawless, disrespectful honor between the institutions. It's part and parcel of what we saw in this outgoing administration.
Well, then
Sam,
the follow-up question on that would be, I'm sorry, Dave, but my follow-up would be then, was this money originally allocated with the consent of Congress, do you know, or what would you think?
Well, sure. No, Congress had this as a part of foreign aid funding or whatever line item. It's this is said foreign aid, so let's suppose it was a foreign aid funding line item. But they don't call it out. It's not specific. It's got to go to the Congo or X amount of dollars to Sub-Sahara or, they don't call it out like that. It's in a pot. Mm-hmm. And the president can exercise authority. He exercised his preference, and obviously this reflects his preference. Palestinian Authority, Hamas.
Once again, I think, Sam, what you're saying is this. Our president's loyalties are coming through with where he wants the money to go. And again, it sounds also like this is a giant slush fund that I believe our incoming president may deal with, maybe dramatically. He will deal with, I have no doubt, in some degree. But friends, this is absolutely unbelievable. And by the way, this story is one of the hottest items that's being discussed out there right now. This incredible amount of money that's gone to the Palestinian Authority. And with respect to that, when we come back from the break, we're going to bring aboard our Middle East expert, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, for a discussion of the post-inauguration attitude in Israel and the Middle East. And I think he may have some comments about the expenditure of this money as well. So don't miss this after this brief timeout.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. This is the first week of a new administration in Washington, D.C., following the inauguration last Friday of President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. They come into office facing significant challenges, promises of hope, vocal opposition, and enthusiastic support. None of us but God knows what is ahead, but we do know that Scripture encourages us to pray for those in authority. As one who works in the political realm and deals regularly with elected officials, I have observed firsthand the great temptations, challenges, and difficulties that these men and women and their families face on a daily basis. This reality has further confirmed to me the wisdom of God's command for us to pray for those in authority. Let's commit together to remember our new leaders in prayer. If you'd like more information on who represents you, go to the Citizen Action Center at pafamily.org. That's pafamily.org.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Freedom's Foundation at Valley Forge welcomes former Homeland Security Intelligence Officer and Foreign Policy Research Institute Fellow Jack Tomarcio to speak on politics, hacking, and the new Russia. All are welcome to attend this fascinating talk on Wednesday, January 25th at 7 p.m. at Freedom's Foundation. For directions and RSVP, go to www.freedomsfoundation.org or check out our Facebook or tweet us at FFVF.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
$227 million. Well, that is Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, what we pay you to be on this program over the course of a year. Is that about right, Dr. Jimmy? I'm teasing, of course, but welcome to Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, thank you very much. And I got my $2.50, if that's what you're talking about. But, hey, you know, this is outrageous what Obama did in the last hours of his time in office as president. Let me just share a couple of thoughts. You guys hit it right on the head just a few moments ago, but a couple of other thoughts. First of all, that money goes into the hands of Mahmoud Abbas. Now, he is the president of the Palestinian Authority, which is the government of the Palestinian people. Howbeit, Hamas, who is in the Gaza Strip, they are not really participating in the government. They're trying to have coalition talks, so the two groups, Hamas and Fatah, which is the organization under Mahmoud Abbas. Also, he's the president of that as well as the Palestinian Authority. Not trying to confuse everybody, but the two factions are Hamas and Fatah, and then Mahmoud Abbas. Now, remember, he was the lieutenant for Yasser Arafat, and it has been proven of all the monies that were sent in for the Palestinian people. And don't misunderstand me, there are Palestinian people that need financial assistance. That's an absolute. The problem is exactly what you guys brought to the table. They're not using the money for helping humanitarian needs of the Palestinian people, but instead to pay salaries for those Palestinian terrorists who are actually serving time in jail right now. But in addition to that, when they get out of jail, when they go back into their terroristic activities, they're getting continual pay as far as that's concerned. But let me also remind you that when Yasser Arafat was in charge, he took off the top of all the money that came in somewhere in the area of about $6 million, which he put in his pocket. And, of course, his lieutenant learned everything that Arafat did in the past. So we do not know at this point in time how much Mahmoud Abbas is taking off the top. He is a man right after the elk of Yasser Arafat. He's probably doing exactly that. So this is a bad situation. By the way, my late information is, I don't know if you guys have heard this or not, but President Trump has put a check, a stop. He has frozen the funds going to the Palestinians. I'm not trying to say the Palestinian people do not need some funding. It's just the channel by which we're trying to get to the Palestinian people. That's the conduit that is really bad.
Dr. Jimmy, let me do this. I know we could talk about this probably for a long time. It is so angering. It is so irritating. There, it appears as if there's been no one guarding the farm, so to speak, and this money is just going, you know, who knows where. From the way Sam described it, it sounds like a slush fund. But I want to shift gears just a little bit. From what we're hearing and from what you, I think, have indicated that you are hearing, is that some of the Trump advisors and some of the architects of his foreign policy are preparing to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And the response that's coming from the Palestinian people is quite dramatic. So set that in juxtaposition to what we've been talking about. It's really a contrast between Barack Obama and Donald Trump. Talk about that for a little bit.
Well, it's definitely a contrast between our former president, Barack Obama, and our present president, Donald Trump. During the campaign, Donald Trump made the promise he was going to move the United States Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Now, this should have been done years ago, and most every president for the last, eight or nine presidents have made a promise they were going to spend the time, the money, and what it was necessary to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Jerusalem has always been the capital of the Jewish state of Israel. All the governmental offices are there. The prime minister's offices are there. All the ministers have their offices there. All the different ministry agencies are located in Jerusalem. And forgetting all of that, you go back to the book of 2 Samuel chapter 5. God gave King David the city of Jerusalem, which was at that time a Jebusite stronghold. He gave King David the authority to go into Jerusalem, defeat the Jebusites, and set up Jerusalem as the political capital of the Jewish people. That's 3,000 years ago. Everybody forgets that, but that was set in place by God 3,000 years ago. Now, in these first days of the Trump administration, it looks like he is moving in that direction. I have to give this little caveat, though. He sent Rudy Giuliani over to meet. This was the first representative of the Trump administration to go into Israel. And Giuliani arrived, met with the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. He said he is still keeping on the track to keep his promise, but this is going to be a complex move, and we have to work through this thing. We have to discuss it, go through it, and everything else. One of the reasons that Donald Trump, as president, has now invited Benjamin Netanyahu the first of next month to come to Washington to discuss this. I've got to tell you, the Jerusalem officials, the mayor and his staff, are already meeting with Trump's people in Washington, D.C. The architects, as you said, have been sent into Jerusalem to look at a piece of real estate that they think may well be. There's already a property in the area of Jerusalem on the outskirts down near Bethlehem that has buildings in place. There's nobody occupying those buildings right there. So they could move into there, but they're sending people, both the Israelis and the United States, sending people into Jerusalem, going into Washington, making these visits, and having these discussions. It's going to be a complex deal, but at the same time, all of a sudden, while this move is becoming reality, there is a dire warning that's coming out, and you alluded to it. The Palestinian people say it is a declaration of war, and blood will flow in the streets of Jerusalem. The king of Jordan, King Abdullah, who is normally very pro-United States, has taken a stand on this. He said it will be a catastrophic event if the Trump administration does move the embassy, the United States embassy, into Jerusalem. Nikata Sadr, now you may have heard of that name. He's a radical cleric located in Baghdad, Iraq. He was the one who said that if the United States didn't pull out, and that was at the very beginning of the Obama administration 8 years ago, he said, if they don't pull out, disengage here in Iraq, my Mahdi militia is going to go after them and kill them. So let me translate, Mahdi militia. That Mahdi is the Arabic word for Messiah. Militia is a military operation. And Nikata Sadr is a very influential Muslim cleric. He's a radical. He, in fact, a portion of the city of Baghdad is named Sadr City after his father, who was also a very influential Islamic cleric, another radical. All of them have been trained in Iran. They are working with the Iranians. Remember, the World War III of modern-day Iraq is of the Shiite persuasion, and they're about 60% of the entire population. And what Mikhail Sadr has called for, he's called for he and others in the Islamic world, and he's trying to bring the entire Islamic world together to go into Jerusalem to liberate it. That's a news headline on the front page of the Jerusalem Post today, on the front page of my top 10 news stories, prophecytoday.com. He wants to go in and liberate it. He's got his people, they're jacked up, they're ready to go. Islam is really ignorant of the facts on the ground. As I said, Jerusalem is Israel's capital. It's been that way for 3,000 years. And I want to tell you something. This is absolute. You can take this to the bank. The Jews are never going to give up Jerusalem. They're not going to do it. Bible prophecy said it was given to them. They're not going to give it up. God chose the place to dwell among his people forever.
Jimmy, it's a great delight to see the difference between Barack Obama and Donald Trump as it relates to their attitude towards Israel. I think that we are going to see without a shadow of a doubt that the United States of America is going to become a stronger friend of Israel under Donald Trump. But with this idea of him wanting to move the embassy to Jerusalem, what do you think is going to happen at the United Nations as well as amongst the Palestinians? Can we expect any kind of reverberation from this from either one of those two groups?
Well, the Palestinians, along with Mikhail Sadr, are also calling for the Islamic world to get involved. They are saying, come and let us protect the city of Jerusalem. The United Nations seemingly has been working hand in hand with the Palestinian people. The Palestinians have manipulated the thinking of the United Nations Security Council, basically, and all the members of the Security Council. It was the United States was keeping away from that type of manipulation. They were vetoing any resolution against the Jewish people until this last one, when the president, then Obama, made the statement abstain, which would again cause the declaration from the United Nations to come forth that all the Jewish settlements are illegal, i.e. the Temple Mount, the most sacred piece of real estate for the Jewish people. So I don't know of anything that they're actually working on right now, with the exception that Mahmoud Abbas is trying to get all the nations, and in particular the members of the United Nations, to recognize a Palestinian state so they can move forward with that two-state solution without the Jews and the Palestinians sitting across the table from each other.
Well, friends, we're discussing with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, the host of Prophecy Today, what's taking place in the Middle East post-inauguration of the 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. And we've got a lot more that we want to talk to Dr. Jimmy about. We're going to talk about the Syrian ceasefire coming up in the next segment. We're also going to be talking about what the Iranians are planning as a result of the Trump inauguration. Where is all that going to go? And what's the Trump administration going to do with respect to Iran? All of that will be in our discussion in the next segment with Middle East and prophecy expert Dr. Jimmy DeYoung. Again, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. This is Dave Kistler along with Sam Rohr and Gary Dahl. Don't miss this exciting Power Pack segment coming up right after this brief timeout.
We'll be right back.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. He said millions of illegal votes went against him. Now President Trump's calling for a voter fraud investigation.
Mr. Trump on Twitter said the investigation will look into those who may have registered to vote in two states, those who are illegal and those registered to vote who are deceased. The president vowed to strengthen up voting procedures depending on the results. Multiple law enforcement sources have told Fox News that there is no evidence to support President Trump's claim.
Fox's John Decker. The sprinter Usain Bolt is stripped of a 2008 Olympic gold medal.
One of his teammates in the 4x100 meter relay, Nesta Carter, tested positive for a banned supplement during reanalysis of samples from the Beijing Games. Today, the International Olympic Committee disqualified that Jamaican team, stating the corresponding medals are withdrawn.
Fox's Jared Max. Bolt still has 8 Olympic gold medals left. Fox News. We report, you decide.
WFYL. From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. This is the first week of a new administration in Washington, D.C., following the inauguration last Friday of President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. They come into office facing significant challenges, promises of hope, vocal opposition, and enthusiastic support. None of us but God knows what is ahead, but we do know that Scripture encourages us to pray for those in authority. As one who works in the political realm and deals regularly with elected officials, I have observed firsthand the great temptations, challenges, and difficulties that these men and women and their families face on a daily basis. This reality has further confirmed to me the wisdom of God's command for us to pray for those in authority. Let's commit together to remember our new leaders in prayer. If you'd like more information on who represents you, go to the Citizen Action Center at pafamily.org. That's pafamily.org.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, our guest today is Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, Middle East and prophecy expert, and also the host of his own nationally syndicated radio program called Prophecy Today. Dr. Jimmy, we have a lot we want to talk to you about, but I want to ask this. You said something about the religious holy war that the Palestinians believe that Donald Trump is starting against them and the entire Islamic world. Is there potentially, because we know the Middle East obviously is going to be the center of the universe in end time biblical prophecy, is the election of Donald Trump possibly something that is going to hasten a biblical component to what takes place in the Middle East because of this decision to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
I'm not sure that because he's decided to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem is the absolute assurance that Donald Trump is going to be a player in setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled by itself. But I am absolutely positive that God does use human world leaders to accomplish his will. In Genesis 9:6, he brought political activity, governmental operation, in place for the purpose of God being able then to direct humankind the way he wanted them to go. Down through the centuries, he's done exactly that. I could give a number of examples. I'll not do that. But chapter 17, verse 17 in the book of Revelation says that the Lord will put into the hearts and minds of political world leaders to accomplish his will. And these stages will be set by almost every decision outside of domestic decisions, and even some of those sometimes will come to the table, but everything outside of domestic decisions made by the Trump administration will play a key role is happening in this world. You're talking about Syria, you're talking about Iran, you're talking about the sectarian battle between the Shiites and the Sunnis. You're talking about Europe. You're talking about Russia and their role in both Europe and the Middle East. I mean, we could go on and on. So what Donald Trump does from the White House is key to understanding how God is using human government to set the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled.
Jimmy, I think that this discussion right here is extraordinarily profound, because a lot of people are thinking about it, and I want to go just a little bit deeper in that. On one hand, I know that I personally said that for the first year that Barack Obama got in office, that ultimately, when we look back, it wouldn't be what he did as much as how God used him to align the nations for the Lord's return. And I just read an article right now coming out of the Israeli News, a section over there that talks about the legacy of Obama. It was completely out the window. It's gone. It's been undone almost overnight. But what has not been undone is the fact that by his actions, we turned our back on Israel. We invited in, effectively, by his actions. Russia's down there. Ezekiel 38, 39 pieces are in place. Now there's a Donald Trump, as you're talking about, that's taking a complete opposite view. And it seems to be a catalyst for further coming together. Now, to that extent, I think it supports what you are saying. But I guess my specific question in that regard is, when you go to the Middle East right now, Iran, that says, oh, okay, we have somebody now who doesn't want to negotiate with us. They are planning, and their word is that they are planning to move in their effort there in the Middle East. You got the Palestinians, and if the Trump administration would come along this week, perhaps, and name the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization, you would really have some things in place that would, I guess, make both sides more crystallized.
Well, you're exactly right, Sam. Look at the calls that Donald Trump has made in his first couple of days. I mean, we're only in, what, day three of his full-time days at work at the West Wing there in the Oval Office, and he's working. What did he do immediately? He talked about Jerusalem and focused on the state of Israel and called Benjamin Netanyahu. He looked at Egypt, the largest Arab nation in the world. He called President Sisi and talked about what needs to be done there. It goes out and asks Theresa May to come on in and meet with him. I think it's this next week there at the White House. Now, Theresa May is in the United Kingdom. She's the prime minister, a major player in the European Union. Though they're trying to get out, they're still going to be a major player in that community of nations in what we know as the European Union. And so he is moving out very, very quickly. He's going to the domestic situation as well, talking about building the wall, talking about doing infrastructure, talking about the pipeline projects, etc. But he has really got everything up and going as it relates to what his Middle East policy is going to be. He's waiting for his Secretary of State to be confirmed by the United States Senate so that that man can get to work and do what needs to be done. He's already got his, we call him Minister of Defense, a Secretary of Defense in the United States, Mad Dog Mattis, and he's ready to go, and he's right in line with the Israeli Defense Force and the military thoughts and philosophy of Israel. So he is moving quickly, but all of these things are key, Sam, as you look at it, and Iran is scared to death about what is going to happen. I mean, they are trembling as to see what's going on. They're concerned about his advisors, his cabinet, where they are anti-Iranian, maybe with the exception of the man who's going to be Secretary of State. They've got $100 billion plus that they was released by President Obama in the Iraqi nuclear deal. They have positioned themselves in Syria and Iraq. And in Iraq, they have a government that is a part of the Iranian people, the military, the oil, the Mosul battle. I mean, everything that's going on in the Middle East, Donald Trump is moving quickly to get up on top of that. He is a man He's a manager. He may not know everything about foreign affairs. He may not understand all the idiosyncrasies of what we as a would like to have as a president. But he is a manager. He knows how to select good people, put them in place, and every one of the people that he's selected will do and make decisions. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. I've looked into these personalities. Every one of them are going to do things that are going to shut down, for example, every effort they can with the Iranians. The Iranians want to take over the Shiite and Sunni world. That's the conflict, the infighting going on in the sectarian world. The Iranians are now holding military exercises in Iran, getting ready for whatever Donald Trump may give the order to do. By the way, they're also training children to go to war. That's a terrific decision they're making. And it's all based upon Iran's eschatology. It's a dangerous driving force behind the Iranians. And we're just praying that Donald Trump will make wise decisions, decisions that are biblically correct. So I'm not sure that he's a born-again Christian. He has many of them around him, and he's going to have advisors telling him to do things, make decisions that are going to be biblically direct, correct. And that's a real pleasing thought to me as we think about what the future is going to hold. Should the Lord care?
You know, Jimmy, I think you're reading my mind, because talking about born-again people, either in the cabinet or in the West Wing of the White House, he has 9 born-again people working around him to give him direction and biblical insight, and he has others who are advising him as well. So I think that what we are going to see in Donald Trump are a lot of biblical decisions, whether he understands it or not. But allow me, if I may, to put you into Donald Trump's shoes. In this last administration under Barack Obama, our relationship with Israel has really gone down the tube, and we've weakened our stance with the nation of Israel. What process do you believe and would you take, if you were the president of the United States, to once again strengthen our relationship with the nation of Israel?
Well, of course, it goes without saying, moving the capital, the embassy into the capital of the state of Israel, Jerusalem. That is the top agenda plan for Trump, according to what he's already done with seeing the action. But that would be a key decision. I would do everything I possibly could to get my son-in-law in there and to start negotiating that Palestinian-Israeli conflict, seeing if you can bring some type of resolution to that. That's key, so that both of the peoples can go forward with their lives, especially the Israelis. The Israelis are doing everything they can to reach out to the Palestinians. The Palestinians are only getting harder, saying that Donald Trump has going to bring about a religious jihad, a holy war in the Middle East, with what they're saying. I think I would go and move in that area. The fact that he's having Prime Minister Netanyahu come and visit him, one of the early world leaders to visit at the White House with Donald Trump, the relationship that they have had over the years, because they've known each other for years, I would do whatever I could to continue to develop that. I would let the world know, and especially the Islamic world, the United States is not going to back away. They're not going to play games as the past administration has done. We are going to stand with the only democracy in the Middle East. So I would do whatever actions, I would take whatever steps to make sure that the rest of the world, in particular the Islamic world, knows exactly where the United States stands. I have to say, in my opinion, one of the only reasons that the United States is still the number one power, though that's in question, but the number one power in the world, is because of their relationship with the nation of Israel. Not because they're standing with a secular humanistic government necessarily, because Israel doesn't make every decision that would be biblically correct. But the Lord tells them they have to stand with the Jewish people. And the majority of all the Jewish people in the world, about 13 million, there's almost 7 million Jews living in Israel today. And so he is going to be blessed by the Lord, Genesis 12, verse 3, if he honors that relationship with the Jewish people, protects them in the world, as he seems he's going to do.
Well, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung is our guest today. And Dr. Jimmy, Gary asked you that last question, said he was going to put you in Donald Trump's shoes. And if he does that, you have to have an Armani suit to match. All right? So you're going to be top tier by the end of this program. Actually, you are already, my friend. We appreciate you so much. Friends, stay tuned to Stand in the Gap today, because when we come back from the break, a key Secret Service official has made the following statement: I'm not willing to take a bullet for Donald Trump. Can you believe it? Join us after this brief timeout.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like: the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
WFYL, this is Russ.
Russ, I missed my favorite radio program. Is there any way to listen to it after it's been aired?
Well, you can go to our website, 1180WFYL.com. That's 1180WFYL.com, and listen to our podcast.
What's a podcast?
A podcast is a show or program that is archived on a website, which you can access from your mobile phone or computer. Just go to our website, 1180WFYL.com, and click on the menu bar the word podcasts. From there, you'll be shown a list of our available programs that we produce locally, and you can listen to them anytime you like, 24/7.
Oh, that sounds great. Thanks so much for your help.
Thank you for calling and for listening. God bless.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
President Ronald Reagan delivered his State of the Union address to Congress on this day, January 25th, 1984, making reference to the fact that they open each session of Congress with prayer. President Reagan stated, "Each day your members observe a 200-year-old tradition meant to signify America is one nation under God. I must ask, if you can begin your day with a member of the clergy standing right here leading you in prayer, then why can't freedom to acknowledge God be enjoyed again by children in every classroom across this land?"
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
As Ronald Reagan once said, if we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, you're not going to believe this story, but a senior U.S. Secret Service agent posted on Facebook, and actually this was done back in October, that she would not be willing to take a bullet for Donald Trump. Now, if you know anything about the Secret Service, you understand that they are highly trained individuals, and they're trained to do precisely what she is saying she is unwilling to do. The lady that made this statement is Carrie O'Grady. She's a special agent in charge of the Secret Service's Denver District, and that district oversees coordination along with Washington-based advance teams for all presidential candidate and presidential trips to the area, including all upcoming and future trips by the president, vice president, or Trump officials. Now, gentlemen, I want to go here and I want to talk about this, and we'll get Dr. Jimmy's response to this as well. But I bring this up today, and this is a hot item in the news as well. It's being talked about and trending on social media in a large way. But what is so disturbing about this is the fact that 3 months after President Ronald Wilson Reagan became president, there was an assassination attempt on his life. He was doing things, making decisions that were highly unpopular. And yes, I understand that John Hinckley Jr. was just an emotionally unstable individual. We don't know that there was any more to his attack than just his emotional instability. But there are entities out there, Sam, and I want to go to you first about this, that would love nothing more than to stop what Donald Trump has already done, and certainly stop with respect to the Middle East, as Dr. Jimmy has spoken so eloquently already. Love to stop that. Sam, this coming from a Secret Service agent is beyond troubling, don't you think?
Well, Dave, it absolutely is troubling. And, you know, unfortunately, part of what this administration is being faced with are individuals that were put within the ranks of government. We've talked about on this program. They're having to go through and thin out individuals that the Obama administration put in that were not just favorable, for instance, to our enemies, to Muslim Brotherhood, terrorists. They're throughout government in high places. These people have been deeply seated. Now, I don't know what this person's indication is here. It looks like she has a strange affinity to Hillary Clinton, and she's for her. I'm with her, is a statement that she made. That's an odd thing, because it really, what it says is that her oath, her respect for the office of presidency is way down the list from some personal alignment. So, Dave, I think that you may see some of these things, but I think the greater point I'm saying is that I think this administration is uncovering a lot of these types of individuals, which should not only be removed, they should be legally prosecuted.
Well, I would agree with you, Sam. In fact, one of the statements that Ms. O'Grady used was this, and I apologize for the word, but she said, "The Hatch Act be damned, I'm with her." And of course, "I'm with her" is a phrase that was used by the Clinton campaign team, rather. Sam, explain a little bit, if you would, about what the Hatch Act is. What was she referring to when she says, "The Hatch Act be damned"?
Well, David, I can't go into full detail on it right now, but it does govern those who are in positions of authority. And I'm not going to go any further right now, lest I give the wrong piece of. There's different application of the Hatch Act, and I'm not quite sure what she is referring to. So I'm going to withhold my commentary on that now.
Well, I'll follow up, and then I want to ask a question of Dr. Jimmy. I think what she's referring to is there's a portion of the Hatch Act that says that employees, federal employees, are not to post or comment on a blog or social media site anything that advocates for or against a partisan political party or a candidate for a partisan political office. And of course, if that is the case, which as I understand it, it is a part of the Hatch Act, she egregiously violated that. And so I hope, gentlemen, that this lady is going to be removed from her position, though she has apologized for that and said, you know, I was expressing frustration with what appeared to be the pending inauguration of Donald Trump, or the pending election inauguration of Donald Trump. But still, this is very, very disconcerting. Dr. Jimmy, you have been in and around politicians, political leaders, both in the United States and certainly in Israel for decades. If this kind of thing were, and I just don't know that it would ever happen like this in Israel, but if this kind of thing were to happen in Israel and a person with the IDF or anyone slated with protecting Benjamin Netanyahu were to make a comment like this, what would happen?
They'd be put in jail immediately, because that is totally contradictory to the philosophy of the security for the leaders of the state of Israel. Shin Bet is the organization. You have the Mossad, which is the intelligence gathering organization, and then Shin Bet, the inner operation of those security people who are involved with the responsibility of protecting the prime minister, all of the ministers and the different agencies there to protect them with their life if they have to, whatever they need to do to shut them down. Now, you're right. I've had the privilege and opportunity, and I praise the Lord for this, not because of me, but because of his opening. I've had the opportunity to interview, talk with, meet with every prime minister since 1991 when I arrived in the country, and many of those people who are involved in the leadership. I've also met and interviewed the president of Israel, and, of course, Reverend Reuven Rivlin is the president of the United States. We went to interview him. We were doing a television special, and we went into the Knesset, where his office was. At that time, he was the speaker of the Knesset before he was voted by the majority of the Knesset members to be president. And to get in to meet with him was unbelievable. He had Shin Bet agents outside his office, in the office, every place we would go. Now he's president. I've gone to the president's residency every year that I've lived in Israel for the time when they bring the ambassadors and the news media in there to meet together on Independence Day. And you can tell who the Shin Bet people are. Most of the time they're wearing their shirts out. They've got the Uzi machine guns under those shirts. They're ready to go. And so if anybody was ever to make any kind of a statement or even hint that they would not be ready to give their life to one of the leaders of Israel, they would go to jail and probably be under a death penalty.
You know, I think that one of the things that we've got to be concerned about is the safety of our president. And I think, Jimmy, our time is about out here. So I may ask you, if you would, please, in just a few moments to lead us in prayer for the safety of our president, as well as for the strengthening of our relationship with Israel. But, you know, one of the things that we need to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that God is the one who has put people into office. Romans chapter 13 teaches us that. Therefore, Donald Trump is indispensable as long as God wants to use him. We must keep that in mind, but at the same time, we must pray for his safety, realizing, as Psalm 121 and verse 5 says, the Lord is our keeper. We just need to continue to bring Donald Trump into the hands of the Lord. Jimmy, we have about 30 seconds left. Would you please conclude our program in prayer today?
Thank you, Gary. I'll be happy to do that. Lord, your word, 1 Timothy 2, pray first of all for those in higher authority. We're doing that as you have exhorted us to do through the Apostle Paul. We're praying for the protection of our president, the vice president of the United States. We're praying for the decision-making process that both the president and the vice president are going through now. Give them wisdom. Allow the man who's the vice president, a born-again Christian, to help Donald Trump see biblical principle and then to move forward in his decision-making process. We pray for the relationship between the United States and Israel. That's commanded in God's word as well. And we thank you for what you're going to do as we pray these things in my name, Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Dr. Jimmy, so much. And friends, the first official state visit from a foreign leader will be Benjamin Netanyahu to the Trump White House. I have a feeling it's going to be vastly different than the way he was received by the Obama administration. Well, friends, 23 hours from now, join us again for our next installment of Standing in the Gap Today. Until then, stand up where you are boldly for the truth. This is Dave Kistler, Gary Dole, Sam Rohr, and Jimmy DeYoung. Have a blessed day.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government, taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4th, 1801.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180.